on great radio stations all across America. It's The National Defense with Randy Miller and Jerry Newberry.
The National Defense is made possible by Ford. Go further. By The Home Depot. More saving, more doing. And by Subway. We sell delicious sandwiches that you will like, and you should get one. Subway. So much sandwich.
This is The National Defense, Randy Miller and Jerry Newberry. And Jerry, as always, our dedication.
Hey, this show's for you, the men and women serving in our military. It's for the millions of veterans out there, and it's for all their families. We're here for you. We love you. God bless you.
And our good friend Colby is on with us. You talk about a guy that's a little bit busy. How would you like to be in charge of the Red Cross about now, Jerry?
Well, it's, man, yeah, wow, what a job.
I mean, it's an incredible job. And Senior VP Colby Langley is with us. Colby, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic, Randy. Thanks, Jerry. I really appreciate the invite back on the wonderful, wonderful program.
I just can't.
We do have a lot to talk about.
Yeah, I just can't believe that you have the time even to talk to us. You are in Houston right now, right?
I am actually not in Houston. We are. We have a operations center here in Washington, D.C. that I'm currently manning.
Okay.
And a call center as well that that handles the volume, the significant volume of calls that we're receiving. So I'm running that right now. I'll be out to Houston probably later on this week.
Okay. Give us an idea of the volume that you're receiving. I mean, the emails and the phone calls,
right.
Things got to be blowing up over there, right?
Yeah, it's pretty intense. Right now, FEMA is indicating that as many as 67,000 homes are going to be damaged. We increased our daily calls by fourfold. On the emergency communications line that the military runs. And there's a lot of spillover between the line, emergency line that we run and our 1-800 Red Cross number. So we're experiencing multiples of volumes on those calls. We handled over 2,000 calls in the first 12 hours of Hurricane Sandy alone. And we're at that pace right now, just on the emergency line, let alone what we're doing on 1-800 Red Cross.
Well, and now it looks like
pretty significant.
Now it looks like, Colby, that it's going to head toward or has landed now, hit land in Louisiana. And so, unlike other organizations, the Red Cross has to be able to be in multiple places at one time, right?
Yeah, we are, but you know, it's not unusual for us to do that. We stage and we recruit volunteers regionally, and we also have a system by which we transport folks. For instance, yesterday afternoon, we already had over 1,000 volunteers on the ground in Texas. A great number of those were from out of state. Mm. We provide over 30,000 meals and snacks just in a 48-hour period. We had 80 tractor-trailer loads of cots and blankets and comfort kits and kitchen and cleaning supplies that were on the ground. All of that, great number of that is pre-staged, and we recruit local volunteers, train them on how to do disaster response and disaster recovery, and then we keep them up to speed on these things by responding to smaller disasters, smaller emergencies, as well as home fires over the course of the year. So that's generally how we do it. It's a large national network, and we build up the capacity well in advance before it's needed.
Okay, so that explains a few things right there for me personally, because I did go online and signed up to be a volunteer the other day. I got an email back saying my background check. Somehow I passed the background.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Yeah.
but anyway, I've been sitting here ever since wondering, okay, now what? So
yes.
What's going to happen is they'll contact me to work locally first. Is that correct?
Yes. So I think this is an important point. We've had tremendous volume coming through Volunteer Connection.
I'll bet.
And have actually had to update the technology in order to handle all the requests. We're an organization that does take some time to vet our volunteers because we do want to make sure that they're properly trained on how to respond to these kinds of situations and
sure.
are in proper physical condition, have proper background checks, and we're not placing people on the ground in a situation where they can't be successful. So although some folks don't operate that way, we do event-based volunteers, and we've had to do a lot of that, very quick vetting and putting people to work. But the magic sauce, right, with the Red Cross is that we take just a little bit of extra time to make sure that we have the right volunteers with the right skill sets in the right place at the right time. So you will be in that system for a little bit. It could be a week, could be 2 weeks, possibly. If you're an event-based volunteer and you just show up on site, of course we're going to find something for you to do immediately. But that also requires a different level of management and training as well. Most people don't realize how difficult it is to manage volunteers.
It's
one thing to have tens of thousands of people coming to volunteer. It's something much different to have a system in place by which you can put them in the right place at the right time.
Right.
Yeah. And Colby, I used to have a really deep, great impression of the Red Cross before I would even think you would consider somebody like Jerry Newberry as a volunteer. So I got to retrain myself.
Nice.
What I do understand though is that any time that you have a crisis like this anywhere, I'm sure you just get jam-packed with volunteer requests because people, it tugs at their heartstrings. They want to do something. They want to do something that's important and help someone. And a Red Cross is the absolute perfect place to go.
Well, I've been looking for something aside from this horrible thing that's occurred down that way. I've been looking for something to do with my life since I retired. Other than do this show, because the lack of activity is kind of driving me nuts. So I think the Red Cross is a good fit for me.
Yeah. You get a lot of requests like that, or people in that kind of station in life.
We do, absolutely. A lot of for your audience, a lot of military retirees are indispensable to these operations. A lot of folks that have served in the military, and veterans and military family members are indispensable for their level of organization, motivation, and flexibility. And we greatly value, our veteran population and our military family population in the disaster space.
Well, I want to get into that a little bit deeper here, Cole, because I want to talk about the Military Veteran Caregiver Network. But before we get into that and kind of leave Houston, I just want to find out and recognize you guys, because there's a lot of talk right now about scam artists. There's a lot of talk about people who prey on this. I can't even imagine it.
It happens.
Prey
all
on
the
this
time.
Type of situation, and they try to enlist like their fundraising. And if you want to give money to help Houston or anybody, give it to the Red Cross. Give it to the Red Cross.
Yeah, don't give it to Larry's Relief Society.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Well, and the other thing is, that's what I think separates you guys from any other organization, because you know that if you send something to the Red Cross, and I did it the other day just on the website, you can designate, give this money to the Harvey Relief Fund, you know?
Yeah.
And so I don't know why it's so tough for people to understand. If they want to do something, give the money to the Red Cross, and you guys have that kind of credibility, Colby, that I've seen, not only just, regular citizens, but I mean, in terms of celebrities and organizations.
Well, they've been a while and have done a few things.
Yeah. So, I think that's an important point to get out there about if you want to help and you want to give, Red Cross. And what's the text line? That's an easy way.
You can donate $10 by texting Harvey to 90999.
That's so easy.
Text Harvey, the word Harvey to 90999. That'll be a $10 donation. I got to tell you, there are a lot of fantastic organizations that are out there on the ground, supporting it. We can't do it alone, but we also can't do it without funding and support. We had 73,000 ready-to-eat meals on the ground in the morning of August 29th. We have 32,000 shelter residents in 232 shelters. And that's less than 72 hours after this thing hit.
Man.
This is what we do. We take every donation and place it directly into work. 90 cents on every dollar goes into the field, and the vast, vast majority of our workforce are volunteers.
Right.
So this is it's what we do, and every donation is well spent.
And again, we talked about this yesterday, Randy, that you know, those who doubt that America is great,
right?
Look at the Red Cross
exactly.
and the volunteers and the thousands and thousands of people who are supporting them by donating.
Yeah,
that's America.
And the American Red Cross just didn't get great.
I mean, exactly.
They've been great.
Exactly.
We're standing guard with the truth, the national defense.
The National Defense is made possible by United Airlines, proud to employ veterans across our entire airline.
Welcome back to the National Defense. It's Randy Miller and Jerry Newberry. How would you like to be in charge of the Red Cross about now, Jerry?
Well, it's, man, yeah, wow, what a job.
I mean, it's an incredible job, and Senior VP Kobe Langley is with us. Hey, Kobe, let's talk a little bit about this Military Veteran Caregiver Network. This is pretty special.
Yeah, it's a fantastic, fantastic tool and resource that we have for military and veteran caregivers. Most folks in your audience will remember this. There was a broad debate about 5 years ago on the level of support that we provide to military and veteran caregivers. And there was a shift in dynamics in terms of the way that people viewed our obligations as a society to provide this level of support. So both DOD and VA started a caregiver program about 5 years ago. First large-scale military and veteran caregiver program that had been authorized by Congress in our war's history. And along with that came a very strong analysis by RAND and a wonderful researcher that many in this field know by the name of Terry Tenelian, as well as a advocacy and support for that study by Elizabeth Dole and the Dole Foundation.
Sure.
And what they found was it's great to provide financial assistance to caregivers. It's great to provide some level of training to them, which both the DOD and VA program did. But there's a critical gap in connecting military caregivers together and having caregivers speak with other caregivers in a private, confidential, virtual setting where they can share best practices, where they can talk to each other confidentially, where they can identify events where they can go, where they can help mentor other caregivers as well.
A great idea.
And so the Military and Veteran Caregiver Network was crafted and created 2 years ago and was originally in its pilot phase through Tragedy Assistance Program for Survivors. And as it started its expansion, we had the opportunity to bring them on board here at the American Red Cross. And that's what the network is. It's a social and educational network for veterans and military family caregivers of all eras to provide high-quality peer support programs and services.
I mean, just to have somebody to talk to, as far as caregivers, that's a 24/7 deal.
And caregivers give so much.
Yeah.
And, Congress, hopefully, I believe they did. Maybe you can square me away on this. They just stepped up to increase funding and support programs for caregivers.
Recently through the VA.
Yeah.
They did, and it's a nascent area. I mean, it's very rare to have a new era. A new area of service in the veteran military family community. And this is really new. I mean, generationally, even the concept is new. We placed a great burden on our military family members from previous eras and assumed, that the family and the extended family was going to take care of mom or dad when they got back home, and they were different and they had challenges. And that was our societal dynamics. Well, things have changed, and families are much more displaced than they have been in the past. And there's a greater need to provide uniform services and support for military caregivers.
Man, it's great stuff as always, Kobe. Listen, thank you so much for the time today. Right in the middle of everything else you're doing, thank you for what the Red Cross is doing in Houston and everywhere. And I mean, we don't even have time to cover where else they are right now, yeah. but they're
wherever everywhere. There's a need, they'll be there. So
yeah, absolutely. We know that. Absolutely. Yeah. And once again, redcross.org, best place to go. You want to donate, that's where to put your money. That's just it's great stuff, Kobe. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Randy and Jerry. I really appreciate the time.
We'll talk to you again soon. We'll be right back here on the National Defense.
The National Defense is made possible by ADT Security. For over 140 years, your first line of defense. And by Hilton Hotels. With over 10,000 veterans and military spouses hired in the last 3 years, Hilton offers a world of opportunity. Visit jobs.hilton.com/military.
Welcome back to the National Defense. It's Randy Miller and Jerry Newberry. Man, this is exciting, Jerry.
I'm pumped.
This is good stuff.
Yep.
If you live in America and you haven't heard of Ken Burns...
Then you're not living in America.
You're not living in America. No, he's a filmmaker. He's you know some of his documentary films, of course, The Civil War, baseball, jazz. I love the National Parks, America's Best Idea.
That was a good one. They're all good ones.
He's earned 2 Academy Award nominations, several Emmys. His new documentary is called The Vietnam War, an epic 18-hour series produced with Lynn Novick. It's premiering September 17th on PBS. And we are so pleased to welcome Ken Burns to the program. Ken, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me.
This is great. You know, and you've talked about that this is probably your most ambitious project to date. I can't even imagine tackling a subject like the Vietnam War. What kind of led you to that?
Well, you know, I your dedication at the head of your broadcast was really moving to me. And I'm, of course, I share those sentiments. Completely. I'm interested in war. War is human behavior unspecified to a degree that the rest of us can only imagine. And so it's very revealing, not just obviously of the worst aspects of humankind, but also the very best. And stories of war also bring out things of extraordinary courage and generosity and intelligence and compassion and, dare I say, that tough four-letter word, love. Yeah. And I made a film on the Civil War. I made a film on the Second World War called The War. And when we were finishing it in late 2006, I just turned to Lynn Novick, the co-director of that, and said, we've got to do Vietnam. Mm-hmm. Vietnam is the most important event in American history since the Second World War. It is so unresolved and so unfinished, a source of so much argument and disagreement and lack of knowledge. There's been extraordinary scholarship that's taken place in the 42 years since the fall of Saigon. Veterans have been willing to tell their stories who were reticent before. We have normalized relations with Vietnam, and so it's possible to go there and triangulate this incredibly complex story by interviewing North Vietnamese soldiers and Viet Cong guerrillas, as well as we did in the American diaspora, interview Arvin soldiers and Vietnamese civilians north and south to get a sense of what was going on, to complement the more than 50 Americans from extraordinarily brave Marines and Army guys that you'll meet to fighter pilots and helicopter pilots and doctors and nurses and POWs and Gold Star families and policy wonks and the Pentagon and people against the war and families torn in half by the divisions of the war. And, of course, we have the presidential tapes, the intimate access to the most, the highest place in the land with Johnson and Nixon in ways that nobody's ever heard this stuff before. And all of a sudden you realize, you know, a good deal of our divisions today, the hyper-partisanship that we feel and none of us likes, it had its seed sown in Vietnam, so that if we could go back and unpack Vietnam and repack it, learn taking advantage of these perspectives, we might be able to get people out of their hardened silos of belief. And it's more often than that, it's kind of political. And I'm not a political filmmaker. I don't have a political axe to grind here. I don't have my thumb on the scale. I'm calling like an umpire balls and strikes as we see them. And I think that will help people to get over this stuff. And so I would really urge everyone within, you know, the extraordinary listenership that you have to just take a chance on this. Watch it with somebody you love. And I think maybe some of those old demons, some of those old ghosts might be packed away, that you'll be saying, as all of our scholars who helped us, none of whom we interviewed. There are no, armchair quarterbacks, Monday morning quarterbacks in this film.
Right.
It's all people. You were either in it or you were opposed to it or you're waiting anxiously for somebody to come back. They all shook their head and said, I had no idea. And we never had a screening, never had a meeting without having at least several veterans there whose, as you know, BS meters are finely tuned and
can spot
fraud and in 2 seconds, and they themselves, their jaws were opening, saying, oh, my God, I never knew. General Merrill McPeak, who is a four-star general, ended as the Secretary of the Air Force, who prosecuted the first Gulf War, the air war then, so successfully, was a fighter pilot in Vietnam. He was bombing the Ho Chi Minh Trail, and we had learned that many of the people driving the trucks and many of the people repairing the road were women. And we'd interviewed two of those women who had done that. And he stood up in his chair and he said, oh, my God, I had no idea. And the veterans would, we'd finish an episode, they'd go out and hug each other or cry and come back in and said, man, I knew my little piece of dirt, but I didn't know that. Thank you so much for telling the complete story.
I think I'm glad you mentioned the triangulation aspect of this, because that's I think that's been what's been lacking in in other efforts.
Jerry, that's what I wanted to ask you too. Yeah. Jerry is a Vietnam veteran,
and
Jerry, you have been kind of hesitant in the past to look at anything that involves Vietnam, to kind of revisit that. And to you, is there anything that you could learn? Or anything you want to learn about Vietnam that you didn't know?
Well, I think we're all open to learning at any time. I'm never going to say I can't learn anything. I like to think I'm pretty well versed. I've done a lot of work in my life reading about it. I've been back to Vietnam, and as you know, I've worked helping veterans almost my entire adult life. Yeah, I think there's the lessons for everyone, and especially as Ken mentioned. Other people who weren't involved in the war.
Right.
There's a lot of lessons to be learned from the impact those times had on.
And Ken, I think you were right when you said, if you were in it, you were in it. If not, you're still affected by it. I mean, if you grew up around the time of Vietnam.
I did.
Me too.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I had a high draft number, but I was painfully aware of everything that was going on. And I thought, well, finally, I've got a project that I know something about. And the first day I started working on it 10 years ago, I suddenly realized how little I knew. It was almost like a daily humiliation. But we turned that into a virtue. If you could approach this humbly and begin to distill all the new information, the declassified stuff, search for archives, still and motion pictures from around the world, take advantage of stuff in Moscow and Beijing and Hanoi and get access to the people, all of a sudden you've got a different sort of perspective on it. And
sure.
I think, as I said before, I think, a lot of people are in their hardened silos with their own beliefs. And it turns out that it makes it very difficult. Things devolve into arguments. We don't need to have an argument anymore except to work out stuff, to get along. I mean, some people want to argue for the sake of argument. And in point of fact, Vietnam sponsors so many things. Well, if only we'd gotten rid of this general and put this general in, we would have won. Well, we don't know that. That's not what happened. And it's just an argument. It's like saying, what if the Confederacy won the Civil War?
Right.
Or what if the Germans had won World War II? That's a nice parlor game, and we can let Hollywood take care of that and conjecture, but that's not what happened. And so we're obligated as documentary filmmakers to just tell this is what happened. And to, as I said, just call balls and strikes and say, this communist land reform, this brutal thing killed millions of people or hundreds of thousands of people. And this atrocity by the North Vietnamese killed 3,000 people. And this atrocity by the Americans was terrible. It's called My Lai. Let's learn a little bit more about it and just go through the story. Good, bad, and otherwise. There's funny moments in this film. There's poignant moments in which you'll cry. And I've watched this. Our veterans have done it, and they've helped us keep sane. And you'll meet some extraordinary veterans. The one, you were just talking, Jerry, about lessons. I think one of the things is that the one lesson we have learned is that we will never blame our warriors again.
Yes.
People came home. And let's just say it didn't happen as much as People like to believe it did, and a lot of it is the military fault, which is the way people were recruited and deployed and then returned home. It was very singular. There weren't the opportunity for parades. For most of the Vietnam War, an overwhelming majority of Americans supported them. There was just an anxiety in the country about it that made it impossible. Did people get spit on? Yes, they did. Did they get protests? But you can see in the very earliest demonstrations, it was saying, bring the GIs home. We talked to a lot of veterans who fought early and came home and then turned against the war. And they said, I went in and said, stop blaming the veterans, and got a standing ovation. Hmm. And so we've got a very complex, nuanced thing. And in fact, in our editing room, we should have put up a big sign saying it's complicated. Whenever we thought we had an easy answer to something, there was something complicated. When filmmakers have a scene that's working and someone comes in and says, well, it's a little bit more complicated than that, you kind of go, grr. Yeah. But in this time, it was like, bring it on.
Right.
Bring it on. Let's make it as complicated as this. Because you know what? Life is complicated.
Yep.
Relationships are complicated. Love is complicated. Just getting through stuff is complicated. And believe you me, war is complicated. And if you think you can, reduce it to a simple binary, one or zero, good or bad, you'll be left behind. And what we wanted to say is that particularly in war, more than one truth can coexist at the same time, and they can both be true. This is not saying we're morally, relative. We're not. Or that this is bland mediocrity. This is about as immersive and exciting a project as I've ever worked on. And I would just say, particularly to Jerry, but other veterans, hang on to your hat. Watch it with somebody you love because, you're going to feel for a moment like it's happening now.
Something important people need to realize that, and you kind of touched on it, Ken, that everybody walks away from combat with a different experience. You're in a firefight, and everybody walks away from that firefight, and they've experienced something different than the person next to them.
That's right.
They're experiencing combat overall in Vietnam. My experience, totally different from a brother who served right next to me.
Yeah, so you know what, Jerry, you bring up a huge point. When you do, we understand why we study war in a superficial, crass way. It's because it's about conflict. If it bleeds, it leads. And we focus on the divisions between tribes, between countries, between armies. And we forget that the most interesting conflicts, the wars, if you will, are the negotiations within people and their memories and experiences. And it's said that we fight every war twice, once on the battlefield and once in our memory. And what we've tried to do is interview enough soldiers, enough warriors, that they can bring back, as you say, Jerry, all those varieties of experience and see the way they wrestle with what they experience, see the way they came to terms with it or didn't, see the way they understood or didn't what went on, and just at the end of the day, look and with very great confidence say, it's complicated. If you want answers, then you can go to some other filmmaker who's going to ram a political manifesto down your throat. But if you want to know what happened without the homework, without the test next Tuesday, please watch our film.
Yeah, we're talking to Ken Burns, filmmaker, the new documentary, The Vietnam War, 18 hours. Ken, I heard you mention 10 years ago. That's when this project started?
Yes.
Wow. It just gives you some idea of the amount of work and the thorough nature. And the thing that I always find fairly incredible about your documentaries that I don't see in any other documentaries really is that you don't have one point of view. I mean, you really go right down the middle of the line. How do you do that? I mean, especially over a 10-year period.
Well, first of all, you have to realize you come with your own preconceived notions, your own conventional wisdom, your own set of baggage. I mean, I lost my baggage so fast, it was like, it never even hit the carousel. My baggage has been gone for 10 years. I don't recognize the person who began this project and the person who ended it up. But that's right. This is a razor's edge. At every single moment, you got to be careful that it's not about you, but about the facts. And, we live in a country where people don't care about facts anymore. Well, we do. And one of the reasons I've worked my entire professional life in public broadcasting is that nobody, there's not a business model, not the premium channels where I'd say, hey, look, you guys, I want to do a history of Vietnam. Oh, that's great, Ken. can you have it out in 2 years? They go, no, it's going to take at least 10 years. It's going to require this many millions of dollars and hundreds of thousands of man and woman hours. But when it comes out, it lasts forever. And the head of HBO, a friend of mine, looked at it and he said, this is the finest thing that will ever be on television.
Wow.
And I said, well, thank you. We won't quote you because you're the head of another network. He said, no, quote me. This transcends what I do.
Well, and the other thing is this upcoming event. Yeah, this show is based in Kansas City, Missouri. And Ken, why don't you just go ahead and move to Kansas City? Because it seems like Kansas City is a part of every one of your documentaries.
Every single one.
Baseball.
From the very beginning.
Jazz.
Well before that. You know, I was doing Thomas Hart Benton. You know,
yeah,
I
right,
was doing
right.
The history of the Congress. I did the Civil War. You know, I did baseball. You
right.
know,
yeah,
I
yeah.
did
jazz. Yeah.
I mean, come on. You know, if so, we're going to be in a week and a half in Kansas City. We're going to be, you know, at the Midland and showing some clips from the film on September 8th. I'm also going to be at the Command and General Staff College and sharing clips with Colonel Will Banks and having a conversation.
Oh,
he's
cool.
in the film. We've already been to West Point, the Air Force Academy, and we'll be heading to the Naval Academy soon. And we're doing this public screening that evening of the September 8th for KCPT at the Midland Theater, and we'll be showing clips and be in conversation with an extraordinary Marine from Missouri, John Musgrave, and with Colonel Will Banks, who's also in our film. And we really look forward to seeing everybody there and getting a little taste of the film, kind of an hors d'oeuvre, wet your whistle before the broadcast that begins on Sunday, September 17th on PBS in every station across the country.
This is the National Defense.
Welcome back to the National Defense. It's Randy Miller and Jerry Newberry. So pleased to welcome Ken Burns to the program. How did you select the people who appear in the film?
You know, it's been a very, very complicated process, and one of the reasons why it takes 10 years to do this is you want to be able to find every picture and every piece of footage that you hear exists, or even ones that don't exist, by diving deep. You know, we did conversations with thousands of people, did kind of pre-interviews with several hundred, ended up doing interviews with, about 179 are in the film, and both the Will Banks and particularly the Musgrave interview are among the finest in the film, as I think you'll see when you watch this clip reel in Kansas City and want to stay for the rest of their story. It's a great story of individual human beings wrestling with what they're going to do in the face of what I said at the beginning of our conversation is, you know, the most important event in American history since the Second World War.
You know, where, in my opinion, where other efforts have fallen short is they don't give full credit to, and that's not the right, I hate to use the word credit, but they don't cover the entire war.
That's right.
And you know, on a personal level, it always irritates me. I was there from...
Well, when I was working on, before I started the Civil War series, I'd ask people, you know, where can I learn? Where can I study about the Battle of Shiloh? Where, you know, people would teach me cause and effect, right?
Uh-huh.
But they would never teach me what actually happened. And you know, the 20 or 40 battles in the Civil War that deserve to be taught. So too with Vietnam. And maybe if, you know, people vaguely remember Tet or Khe Sanh or something like that, Da Nang, well, you know, you're going to learn about At Bac. It's going to be important to you. You're going to learn about Binh Gia. You're going to learn about the Drang Valley. You're going to learn about Ple Me and a dozen other battles that are super important, as well as all of those intimate brawls, as you veterans called it, where, you know, you're out on patrol, and the whole idea of to be on patrol is to be ambushed in order to find out where the enemy is.
Right, right. Bait.
Wow.
Bait.
That's what our guys said, both the Army guys and our Marine guys. And that's no way to fight a war. Plus, as John Musgrave says in the film, war is a real estate business. He says you don't like to get wounded a second time in a hill you've already taken.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. Good point. Yeah.
Ken, this is going to be fascinating. It's called the Vietnam War, 18-hour series, premieres September 17th on PBS. And the other thing that I think is just so kind of unique in what you do with all of your documentaries. Everybody that's an ordinary man or a woman turn after the series, they're stars. I mean, focus your attention on making them bigger than life, and they always come through. And that's just
I'm glad you see that. We feel the same way, and your community is going to have to get to know and then love up a whole bunch of veterans that you are going to fall in love with. I think you're going to fall in love with some of the people who are on the other side. And they understood, and you'll meet some very interesting Americans. And as I said earlier, you know, sometimes courage doesn't take place on the battlefield. Sometimes there's the courage of conscience that you'll see.
Ken, thank you for the for starting another great conversation, because this is what this does.
We owe you.
September 17th,
no,
PBS.
No. I'm happy, you guys. Let's just keep up the conversation. That's exactly what we should do.
Absolutely.
And let's continue to make our country greater.
Well, good luck at your appearance here in Kansas City. And
We'll see you there. And thanks so much, Randy and Jerry.
Thank
for
you
all
so
the time
much
today. Appreciate it.
Ken Burns in the new documentary, The Vietnam War, coming up September 17th on PBS. We'll be right back here on The National Defense.
This has been The National Defense, made possible by Ford. Go further. By The Home Depot. More saving, more doing. By Subway. The footlong sweet onion chicken teriyaki and the footlong Subway Club are a mouthful to say, so don't say them, eat them. Subway. So much sandwich. By United Airlines. Proud to employ veterans across our entire airline. By ADT Security. For over 140 years, your first line of defense.